The Beloved, Lecture Number 9, 29th of June, 1976, at the Bhagwanchi Rajneesh Ashram, Pune. Bhagwan, what dealings can you ever conclude with someone who is unaware of the feelings in loving? The owl stares at the sky, sitting blind to the rays of the sun.
Man is a quest, an eternal inquiry, a perennial question. The quest is for the energy that holds existence together. Call it God, call it truth, or whatsoever you like to call it. Who holds this infinite existence together? What is the center of it all, the core of it all? Science, philosophy, religion all ask the same question. Their answers may differ, but their question is the same. Religions call it God. Scientists will not agree with the word God. It looks too personal. It looks too anthropomorphic, man-oriented. They call it electricity, magnetism, energy fields. But only the name is different. God is an energy field. Philosophers go on giving different names to it. The ultimate stratum, the absolute, the Brahma. From Thales to Bertrand Russell, they have supplied many answers. Sometimes some philosopher says it is water, liquidity. Sometimes somebody else says it is fire. But the quest has been eternal. What holds this infinite universe together? Bowls call it love. And to me, their answer seems to be most pertinent. It is neither personal nor impersonal. It has something of God in it and something of magnetism in it also. Something of divine and something of the earth. Love has two faces. It is Janus-like. One face looks towards the earth, another face looks towards the sky. It is the greatest synthesis conceivable. It comes out of lust and moves towards prayer. It comes out of mud and becomes a lotus facing the sun. This word love has to be understood. What do we mean by the word love? One thing certainly we all mean, that it has a pull in it, a great energy. When you fall in love, it is not that you do something, you are pulled in. It has a magnetic force. You gravitate towards the object of your love. you gravitate almost helplessly. You gravitate even against your will. It has a pull, a magnetic field. That's why we call falling in love. Who wants to fall? But who can avoid? When the energy calls you, suddenly you are no more your old self. Something bigger than you is pulling you. Something greater than you is invoking you. The challenge is such that one simply runs into it headlong. So the first thing to understand is, love is a great energy pull. The second thing, whenever you fall in love, suddenly you are no more ordinary. Something miraculously changes in your consciousness. Love transforms you. A violent man falling in love becomes kind and tender. A murderer can become so compassionate that it is almost impossible to believe. Love is miraculous. It transforms the baser metal into gold. Have you watched people's faces and eyes when they fall in love? You cannot believe that they are the same persons. When love takes possession of their soul, they are transfigured, transported into another dimension. And suddenly, and with no effort of their own, as if they are caught in the net of God, love transforms the baser into higher, transforms earth into sky, transforms human into divine. These two things. First, love is an energy field. Scientists will agree. Second, love is a transforming force. Helps you to become weightless, puts you on your wing. You can move towards the beyond. Religious thinkers will agree. Love is both God and electricity. Love is divine energy. Bowels have chosen love because this is the most significant experience in man's life. Whether you are religious or not, it makes no difference. Love remains the central experience of human life. It is the most common and the most uncommon. It happens to everybody, more or less. And whenever it happens, it transmutes you. It is common and uncommon. It is the bridge between you and the ultimate. Remember three L's: life, love, light. Life is given to you. You are alive. Light is present. But you have to make a bridge between life and light. That bridge is love. With these three L's, you can make a total way of life, way of being, a new way of being. Bows are not philosophers. They are more like poets. They sing, they dance, they don't philosophize. In fact, they are almost anti-philosophical, because they have come to see that whenever a man becomes too much head-oriented, he becomes incapable of love. And love is going to be the bridge. A man who becomes too much head-oriented goes farther away from the heart. And heart is the center which responds to the call of love. A head-oriented man is cut off from universe. He lives in the universe, but lives as if in deep stupor. Lives in the universe, but lives as if a tree is there but has lost its roots. Lives only for name's sake. The sap of life is no more flowing. He has lost contact. He is unconnected. That's what alienation is. The modern man is feeling too much alienated. Feels too much an outsider. Does not feel at home, at ease with life, existence, the world. Feels almost as if he has been thrown in it. And it is a curse rather than a blessing. Why this has happened? Too much head orientation. Too much training of the head has cut all the roots from the heart. There are many people. I observe thousands of people who don't know what heart is. They bypass. The heart is throbbing, but their energy no more moves via it. They bypass it. They go directly to the head. Even when they love, they think that they love. Even when they feel, they think that they feel. Even feeling is via thinking. Of course, it has to be false. Thinking is the great falsifier. Because thinking is man's effort to understand the universe. Love is God's effort to understand man. Let me repeat it. When you try to understand God, our existence, our truth, it is your effort. A part, a very tiny part trying to grasp the whole, infinite whole, the effort is bound to be doomed. It is impossible. It cannot happen in the nature of things. Love is when God has found you. Love is when God's hand is searching you, groping for you. Love is when you are allowing God to find you. Hence, you cannot manage love. You can manage logic. You can be very, very efficient as far as logic is concerned. The moment love arises, you become absolutely inefficient. Then you don't know where you are. Then you don't know what you are doing. Then you don't know where are you moving. Then you don't know any control. Logic is controlled. Love is uncontrolled. Logic is manipulated. Love is a happening. Logic gives you a feeling that you are somebody. Love gives you a feeling that you are nobody. Love arises in you when you allow God to enter you. When you are trying on your own, then the whole effort is absurd. I have heard Mullah Nasruddin sidled up to a guest at one of his daughter's social evenings. He had heard him addressed as doctor, and now he said diffidently, "Doctor, may I ask a question?" "Certainly," he said. "Lately," said Mullah Nasruddin, "I have been having a funny pain right here under the heart." The guest interrupted uncomfortably and said, "I am terribly sorry, Mullah, but the truth is, I am a doctor of philosophy." "Ah," said Nasruddin, "I am sorry." He turned away, but then overcome by with curiosity, he turned back. "Just one more question, doctor. Tell me, what kind of disease is philosophy?" "Yes, philosophy is a kind of disease. And not only an ordinary kind of disease. More cancerous than cancer. More dangerous than all the diseases put together. Because a disease can cut only one root. All the diseases put together even cannot cut you completely from existence. Philosophy cuts you, uproots you utterly. What is a disease? When one connection is loose with existence, you feel ill. Head is unconnected, then there is a headache. Stomach is unconnected, then there is a stomach ache. Somewhere you have become autonomous and you are no more in the ocean of the interdependence of existence. There exists disease. Disease has a certain autonomy, independence. When you have a cancerous growth inside you, that growth becomes a universe unto itself. It is unconnected with existence. A ill person is one who is unconnected in many ways. When a certain disease becomes chronic, it simply means that that root is completely destroyed. Even the possibility to replant it into the earth no more exists. You will have to remain alive only partially. A part of you will remain dead. Somebody is paralyzed. What does it mean? The body has lost contact with the universal energy. Now it is almost a dead thing, hanging, unconnected. The sap of life no more flows in it. If this is what disease is, then philosophy is really the greatest disease there can be, because it disconnects you utterly. And not only that, it disconnects you with such logic that you never become aware that you are ill. It disconnects you with such justifications and rationalizations that you never become aware that you are missing. It is a very self-justificatory illness. It goes on supporting itself. Philosophy means a man has become completely, head-oriented, looks towards existence through the eyes of logic and not through the eyes of love. When you look through the eyes of logic, you will know few things. But those few things will not give you the vision of reality. They will be only abstractions. When you look through love, then you know the reality as it is. Love is falling with the universe together, falling in a togetherness. It is orgasmic. You are streaming, and the existence has always been streaming, and both the streamings meet and mingle and are infused into each other. A higher synthesis arises. The part is meeting in the whole, and the whole is meeting into the part. Then something arises which is more than the part and the whole together. That's what love is. Love is one of the most significant words in human languages, because love is existential language. But somehow, from the very childhood, we are being crippled. Our roots with the heart are cut. We are forced towards the head, and we are not allowed towards the heart. Something humanity has suffered for long, a calamity, that man has not yet become capable of living with love. There are reasons. Love is risky. To love is to move into danger, because you cannot control it. It is not safe. It is not within your hands. It is unpredictable. Where it will lead, nobody knows. Whether it will lead anywhere, that too nobody knows. One is moving into utter darkness. But roots grow only in darkness. If the roots of a tree become afraid of darkness and don't move underground, the tree will die. They have to move into darkness. They have to find their way towards the deepest layers of the earth, where they can find sources of water, nourishment. Heart is your darkest part of being. It is like a dark night. It is your very womb. It is your earth. So people are afraid to move into darkness. They would like to remain in light. At least you can see where you are and what is going to happen. You are safe, secure. When you move in love, you cannot calculate the possibilities. You cannot calculate the results. You cannot be result-oriented. Future does not exist for love. Only the present exists. You can be in this moment, but you cannot think anything about the next moment. No planning is possible in love. The society, civilization, culture, church, they all force a small child to be more logical. They try to focus his energies into the head. Once the energies are focused into the head, it becomes very difficult to fall towards the heart. In fact, every child is born with great love energy. The child is born out of love energy. The child is full of love, trust. Have you looked into the eyes of a small child? How trusting. Anything the child can trust. The child can play with a snake. The child can go with anybody. The child can move so close to the fire that it can become dangerous, because the child has not yet learned how to doubt. So we teach doubt. We teach skepticism. We teach logic. These seem to be measures for survival. We teach fear. We teach caution. We teach prudence. And all these together kill the possibility of love. I have heard Dr. Abrams was called to Mullah Nasruddin Saab, where the Mullah was lying unconscious. Dr. Abrams worked on him for a long time and finally revived him. "How did you happen to drink that stuff, Nasruddin?" he asked the Mullah. "Didn't you see the label on the bottle? It said poison." Nasruddin said, "Yes, doctor, but I didn't believe it." Dr. Abrams, "Why not?" Nasruddin, "Because whenever I believe someone, I am deceived." By and by, people learn how not to believe, how not to trust, how to become a chronic doubter. And this happens so slowly, in such small doses, that you are never alert what is happening to you. And by the time it has happened, it is too late. This is what people call experience. They call a person experienced if he has lost his contact with his heart. Then they say that he is a very experienced man, very clever, very cunning. Nobody can deceive him. Maybe nobody can deceive him, but he has deceived himself. He has lost all that was worthy. He has lost all. And what he is saving. Then a very peculiar phenomena happens. People cannot love persons because persons can be deceptive. They start loving things. Because there is a great need to love, so they go on finding substitutes. Somebody loves his house. Somebody loves his car. Somebody loves his clothes. Somebody loves money. Of course, the house cannot deceive you. Love is not risky. You can love the car. Car is more reliable than a real person. You can love the money. Money is dead. It is always under your control. Why so many people love things rather than persons? And even if they sometimes love a person, they try to reduce the person to be a thing. If you love a woman, you are immediately ready to reduce her to be your wife. That is, you are ready to reduce her into a certain role, the role of a wife, which is more predictable than the reality of a beloved. If you love a man, you are ready to possess him like a thing. You would like him to be your husband because a lover is more liquid. One never knows. A husband seems to be more solid. At least the law is there, the court is there, the police is there, the state government is there. They give a certain solidity to the husband. Lover seems to be like a dream, not so substantial. Immediately people fall in love and they are ready to get married. Such fear of love. And whomsoever we love, we start trying to control. That's the conflict that goes on between wives and husbands, mothers and sons, brothers and sisters, friends. Who is going to possess whom? That means who is going to define whom? Who is going to reduce whom to be a thing? Who will be the master and who will be the slave? Mullah Nasruddin sat moodily over his drink and his friend said, "You look pretty down in the mouth, Mullah. What is the matter?" Nasruddin said, "My psychiatrist says I am in love with my umbrella. And that is the source of my troubles." "In love with your umbrella?" "Yes, is not that ridiculous? I like and respect my umbrella and enjoy its company, but love? But what love else is? If you enjoy the company of your umbrella and if you respect and like your umbrella, what else love is? Love is respect. Tremendous respect. Love is a deep liking. And love is sheer joy in the presence of the one you love. What else love is? People love things. A deep need, somehow fulfilled by substitutes. Remember, the first calamity that one becomes head-oriented, the second calamity that one starts substituting love needs by things, then you are lost, lost in the desert land. Then you will never reach to the ocean. Then you will simply dissipate and evaporate. Then your whole life will be a sheer wastage. The moment you become aware that this is what is happening, turn the tide. Make all efforts again to contact the heart. That's what bowels call love. To make contact with the heart again, to undo that which has been done by the society to you. Undoing that which has been done by the society to is true religion. Undoing all nonsense that has been done by your well-wishers. They may be thinking that they are helping you. And they may not be knowingly destroying you. They may be themselves victims of their parents and their society. I am not saying anything against them. Great compassion is needed for them. Gurdjieff used to say to his disciples that a man becomes religious only when he is able to forgive his parents. Forgive? Yes, that's how it is. It is very difficult the moment you become aware. It is very difficult, almost impossible to forgive your parents, because they have done so many things to you. Unknowingly, of course. Behaving unconsciously, of course. But still they have done. They have destroyed your love and they have handed you with a dead logic. They have destroyed your intelligence and they have given you as a substitute intellect. They have destroyed your life and aliveness and they have given you a fixed pattern to live, a plan to live by. They have destroyed your direction and they have given you a destination. They have destroyed your celebration and they have made you commodities in the marketplace. It is very difficult to forget them. Hence, all the old traditions say, respect your parents. It is difficult to forgive them. It is very, very difficult to respect them. But if you understand, you will forgive them. You will say the same as Jesus said on the cross, Father, forgive them because they know not what they are doing. Yes, exactly, those are the words. And everybody is on the cross. And the cross is not prepared by our enemies, but by our parents, by our society. And everybody is crucified. The head has become so dominant that it does not allow any spontaneity. It has become dictatorial. It does not allow the heart even to utter a single word. It has forced the heart to be completely quiet. You will have to listen again to the heart. You will have to start dropping logic a little. You will have to take few risks. You will have to live dangerously. You will have to move towards the unknown. And you will have to love persons and not things. And you will have to be ready not to possess anybody. Because the moment you possess, the person is not there. Only a thing can be possessed. Try to understand it as deeply as possible. The moment you fall in love with somebody, immediately your whole conditioning starts trying to possess him. Resist that temptation. Devil is tempting you. The devil of the society. The devil of the civilization and the church. The devil stands in a very religious garb. And the devil goes on quoting scriptures. Beware. Whenever you start possessing, you are killing love. So either you can possess the person or you can love the person. Both together are not possible. So this is the alternative. A man who wants to become a bowl, a lover, has to drop all possessiveness. Resist all temptation of being possessive, because that temptation comes from the ego. Once Mullah Nasruddin said to me, "It is remarkable, sir, how congenial we are. After all, we have practically nothing in common." "Ah, yes, we have," I replied. "We have one very important thing in common. I think you are wonderful and you agree with me." the ego goes on agreeing for wrong things, because the ego can exist only with the wrong. It feeds on the wrong. So whenever you feel that your ego is fulfilled, beware. You have eaten something wrong. You have swallowed something wrong. Whenever you feel egoless, relax. Now you have eaten the right something which is in tune with your nature. Ego arises out of disturbance. But ego has its own logic. It says on saying that you are important, that you are the most important man in the world, and you have to prove it. And we all are trying in one way or other, somebody by possessing more money, somebody by possessing a beautiful woman, somebody by possessing prestige, power, somebody by becoming a president or a premier, somebody by becoming an artist, a poet, somebody by becoming a Mahatma. But we are all trying in some ways or others to prove our innermost fantasy that we are the most important person in the world. Then you cannot be a lover. Ambition is poison for love. A lover is not in any need to prove. In fact, he knows that I am loved, and that's enough. Try to diagnose it very carefully. When you are not loved, and how you can be loved if you don't love? When you are not loved and you don't love, suddenly a great need arises to perform, to do something to show to the world that you are important, that you are needed. There is a great need to be needed. You feel futile, impotent, useless if you are not needed. The need in itself is not wrong. It is a love need to be needed. If a woman loves you, you are fulfilled. Somebody needs you. You are significant. Then you don't bother about the crowd. And you don't go in the marketplace and shout that I am important. Then you are no more ambitious. You don't collect money like obsession. If somebody loves you, in that love you are dignified. In that love you become a sovereign. Love makes you an emperor, a sovereign. Love fulfills you so deeply and so greatly, then there is no need to perform or do anything. Ego simply does not exist with love. But if that need is unfulfilled, then you will try to fulfill somehow. You would like to become a very famous man, so many people need you. But remember, to be loved by one or to be needed by millions is not the same. Even a single person's love, even a single glance of love is enough, and you can collect millions of people and they can all look towards you. That will not be satisfying. That's what politics is, and the politician is trying to do. I have never come across a politician whose heart is functioning. His heart is totally dead. But the need is there to be loved, to be needed, somebody to look to, where to fulfill it. He gathers crowds, and through the crowds he tries somehow to fulfill the love need, but that crowd does not love him. That crowd is not bothered by him. That crowd is after her own needs. Because he is in power, he seems to be important. They pay their respect to the chair, and the chairman is deceived. Once the chairman is not on the chair, they don't bother about him. Have you ever observed, once a politician is out of power, he simply is forgotten. Nobody remembers him. He may live for 30 or 40 years. Nobody will know about him. By and by he will recede into darkness. Only once when he will die, there will be small notes in the newspapers that ex-president or ex-premier is dead. The man who ruled over Russia before Lenin, Kerensky, lived 50 years after it. Like a small grocer in New York. And nobody knew about him. He was the prime minister of Russia, the most important man. Revolution happened. He was thrown out of his power. He escaped. For 50 years he lived. Only when he died, then people became aware that Kerensky was alive for all these 50 years.